Hello and welcome to the Sound of Economics from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I'm Zsolt Darvas, a senior fellow at Bruegel, and today we are here for an installment of the Bruegel Backstage, focusing on the need for a new social contract. Joining me today is Maurizio Bussolo, who is a lead economist for Europe and Central Asia at the World Bank, and Bernadette Segal, who is the former Secretary General of the European Trade Union Confederation. We are going to talk about social issues in Europe, and we have just hosted an event where the World Bank report on the new social contract has been presented, and it was a very interesting discussion on the many various different aspects of inequalities. So my first question to you, Maurizio, so what are the novelties of your report in terms of diagnosing what kind of inequalities represent Europe and Central Asia?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the question. The report, one of the main contributions of the report is actually to go beyond the standard measurement of inequality. And we find that there are some aspects that are not always seen, and we emphasize these very much. We found that horizontal inequalities is on the rise, while vertical inequality is not. Horizontal inequality is the disparities among groups. So we'll look at disparities among cohorts or people at different age. We look at disparities among people with different occupations, and we look at disparity among regions. So when you go there, you actually find that there are important trends that are not seen yet in the vertical inequality. So what we need really to look further there, and these are also important because they attack directly social cohesion. One other thing that we found is that the process through which the inequality is generated has become or seems to be more unfair. So even the same level of inequality is less tolerated. So these are important things that we emphasize in this report. The nature of inequality has been changing.
Can you just give a few examples of the differences between horizontal and vertical inequalities? What kind of groups did you look at? And what were the main findings?
Yes, sure. When you look at vertical inequality, basically you're looking at the disparity of incomes between all individuals. And this has been fairly stable in the last, at least last 15 years. Obviously, there are moments where it goes up, where it goes down, but it hasn't increased very much. But when you start looking at disparities among groups, then things are different, as I said. For example, as you ask me, there are differences in terms of wage growth for older cohorts and young cohorts. So older cohorts have experienced when they enter the labor market a strong growth, and now young cohorts, they don't experience that. The labor market has another important transformation, which is the incidence of non-standard employment. Again, that's not the same for all cohorts. Younger especially they face much more uncertainty in the labor market. There has been some concentration of poverty in some regions. So some regions have more poor than they used to be. So there are various examples. Some occupations are more under threat from technological change. I'm referring to the routine occupation. They are substituted much more by automation, etc. So all these different groups are under lots of pressure, so we need to think carefully how to remedy that.
Let me turn to Bernadette. So especially the life of work and analysis has been basically throughout of your whole life. So how do you see the problem of workers in Europe and in more general inequalities in Europe?
First, I certainly welcome the fact that a body like the World Bank is putting forward the question of inequality as an overall problem which is affecting society, social cohesion. And the point that has to be really brought home is that inequalities are not only a moral issue, they are an economic issue and therefore also an issue, a policy issue, a political issue. If you don't have better equality in the various societies, then you will have economic problems which are not good for workers, not good for employers, and not good for those who are running these societies. So it's very good that the idea that stability, security, and equality is brought to the fore by an organization like the World Bank. Of course, I have a number of points that I would like to make on this report, which is making a good analysis on the solutions, essentially, that are proposed to overturn these inequalities. The first one that I find negative, I would say, is the insistence that more flexibility in the labor market is going to be the solution. This idea has been experienced in the last 20 years, and I'm not saying it hasn't worked, but it has worked only when there was sufficient negotiation, discussion between the parties involved, that is to say business and workers, to find the right balance between the need for flexibility and security. So having a top-down approach on flexibility and saying that all the jobs have to be more flexible, I think this is not the right approach for the people we are concerned with.
Maurizio, so what's your view on labor market flexibility?
Okay, this is a big question, but I'll try to address that. What has happened in many parts of Europe, maybe even more on the western side than the eastern side, is that in the last 20 or so years, many countries, governments have tried to improve the flexibility of the labor markets. Indeed, that was a policy that was very much sought after, and it has not necessarily worked so well. And we are changing our views, and we're not so much supportive of a monolithic solution. But what has happened is, and what we show in the report also, is that the flexibility is only for a segment of the population, and mainly is the younger and less skilled individuals. Those are the individuals that have to move very rapidly from one job to another, or from having a job to not having a job. And so the flexibility is not real and valid if it's only for one part of the population. So what we suggest is that we should go towards a more level playing field, where either those who are protected and inflexible should become flexible, or probably even better, where those who are non-protected and face the volatility of the market should have a bit more protection. But basically, what the bottom line is that we should go towards a more level playing field, where everybody face the same risks, or where the risks are shared more equally. So that's the position that we are in.
This approach sounds really similar to me to this so-called flexicurity approach, which is sometimes thought to be originated in Denmark, when there's a relatively large level of flexibility for labor, but at the same time there is also a very strong level of protection and also help those who lose their job. I mean, there are various active labor market policies on helping people finding a new job. Bernadette, would you like that approach, or are you also critical with that form of flexicurity too?
The Nordic way of understanding flexibility has always been very positive, because it was negotiated and because you had very strong compensation for those workers who had to be flexible. At some stage, you had a very long period of unemployment benefit. The problem is that in most of the countries where this concept of flexibility has been implemented, the the side of security was completely forgotten. So the implementation of the flexibility, the flexicurity idea that was a Nordic one, was implemented in other countries as just flexibility. And just to reply to Maurizio in front of me, the answer is not to diminish, to put people on the same low level playing field. It is to give everybody the necessary protection so that they can be confident in their income, in their future, and therefore contribute to society. So just saying to those who are protected, you are too protected, we have to lower your protection, is not the solution. I would much rather like your second alternative, which is to give everybody the proper proper protection. So flexicurity, if you understand it as negotiated way of securing the labor market, yes, but flexicurity as it was understood in many countries where it was implemented as just breaking down the barriers without giving the security that is necessary, no.
But let me come back to you, Bernadette, on this point. So what do you think, what's the reason that, let's say, southern countries or other countries in Europe implemented the flexicurity approach so differently? And also, let me also mention that the European Commission has urged many, many countries to focus on both pillars, both the flexibility pillar and on the social protection pillar. So what could be the reason that governments didn't listen to that advice?
It's a complicated question, but flexicurity is very expensive. If you want to implement flexicurity, give the workers and people in general the security they need, you need to have very solid public finances. It costs a lot of money because the first security that people need is financial security. It's very easy. If you lose your job, then you know how are you going to pay your rent? How are you going to cover the cost for your children? How are you going to see your future? So the cost for public finances of real flexicurity is very important, and I think it's one of the reasons why it was not implemented in many countries. The second reason is that we have been living through a period of ideological influence that you had to do away with this social contract that was built after war. And now we realize that it was not that bad. Trade union always realized it was a good contract. But the idea that everything, all these protections were in fact barriers to progress has been imposed, I would say, by leaders during the last 20, 25 years or even 30 years. And it's one of the reasons why the security aspect was not put into place, and where the idea that employability is the most important things rather than real protection has gained ground. And current development show that we have to rethink this position.
Maurizio, in your research of many, many different countries, not just in Europe, but also elsewhere, can you point us to some good examples? So, for example, you mentioned that if a flexible labor market is introduced, it should be flexible for all different sectors and parts of the labor market, not just a few of them. So can you give some good examples, let's say, beyond the Nordic European countries, which were able to implement a flexible labor market along with the proper level of security for workers?
Okay, but before answering your question, let me spare a little bit with Bernadette. I think we agree on 2 points. One is that we shouldn't necessarily unprotect everybody, so we should have a leveling playing field that is a qualitatively good leveling playing field for protecting everybody. And the other point that I think we agree is that this system tends to cost money. So we should really go beyond therefore the labor market issues, and we should, and that's why we have a social contract. We should also talk about taxation, and we should talk about how you create this security, and you create this security with the good health system, because that's a risk that is an important risk. Perhaps we are fairly in a good position in that sense. But even education, the education that we have is very good, but maybe it's not the education that current markets need. So we need things like lifelong learning education that is needed for giving people the new skills that they need and keeping them able to move further on. And the other part that we have to look is taxation. So if you want to finance an expensive system, you need to be fair on the tax side. So this is an important point. Even if we agree on the 2 points, then there are other issues that we should discuss, and we should go beyond the labor market. Now, to go into your specific questions, I think again there are examples we studied, for example, the aging problem in Europe, and one country that stand out, it's still in the north, but it was Iceland. Iceland is the best country that has dealt very much with the potential inequality that comes with the aging countries. They have the most equal labor access for men and women, labor equity in labor market. So there are examples. Some of the reform of labor market in southern Europe that Italy, Spain have attempted go towards that direction. So they move in the right direction, but it's a complicated move that it cannot be involve only the labor market, but it has to go beyond that.
So then let's indeed go beyond the labor market, and you mentioned at least two very important policies: education and taxation. So, well, I mean, both would deserve, you know, an own backstage discussion in themselves, and we certainly don't have that much time. But let's spend a little time on both. So, what's Maurizio, your key recommendation for the education system first?
Well, it's the education system is a complex system, and indeed, when we look at not just the input side, when we look at not just at the number of diplomas or number of years of education that people receive, but we look at actual learning, we begin to see that there are variations. So the OECD and we at the bank have used a lot of the PISA, the scoring system, so that we need to evaluate the system on the learning side, not just on the income side. The second issue is that the learning doesn't happen only at school, but it happens also at home. It happens also at work. So there's a point there that connects back to the labor market, that is, having jobs that last for some time are very useful for learning. People learn on the job, so there's a value in having jobs that are permanent, or at least that they last long. So again, the last thing that I can say on the education is this, that now we have a vision that people get educated only when they are young, and they basically beyond 20-25 years they're done with the system. We don't have the institution, we don't have an education system, or there are some attempts but not really institutionalized of education along the whole life cycle. And that's, I think, where, especially for aging economy, there is a lot to be seen and worked on.
Another aspect of education is related to the concept of inequality of opportunities, which your report, I think, very nicely presents. Because unfortunately, in many countries, the children of better educated parents also turn to be better educated. And when they grow up, they will also have better income. While the children of disadvantaged and poor families typically have much lower and weaker level of education. And I very much agree with you on the lifelong learning concept. So even after the age of 25, there is still a lot to learn. But I think the start of the education process at early ages are also equally important. And some research have found that, in fact, the early childhood education is really prominent. So I think there shouldn't be a debate between you underlying the importance of equal access to education, including quality education, very importantly, including at a young age. Now, Bernadette, I mean, if you look at, I mean, education systems in Europe are very diverse. I mean, different countries have different strengths and weaknesses. But what would be your main conclusion on what to do to improve opportunities, especially for disadvantaged children?
First of all, I mean, what you say is perfectly correct. I mean, the importance of basic of education in general. I mean, I'm not going to speak longer on that because I think we do agree that it has to be open to everyone. I just want to say a few words on the question of permanent education, long life education. We know very well that in the next years, I don't know for how long, but in the next years, there will be big changes in the economy, in the way the companies are operating, and there will be a need, there is a need for adaptation of the workforce. The problem we see is that instead of organizing this change and enabling workers to have the necessary training to fit to the new jobs, we see on the contrary that older workers are being sacked and being replaced by cheaper people. I really think that on the question of lifelong learning, there is an important point to be made that all workers, even if they are over 50 or 55 or whatever, should have the opportunity to be able to adapt to the new jobs. And this is missing currently. It is a responsibility of employers. It is the responsibility of government. And I think all that has to be negotiated.
Indeed, a very, very good point that the workforce need to adapt to changing technology. Now, before closing discussion, let's address the other major public policy issue, namely taxation. So, Maurizio, let's first start with you. So what would be your key recommendation on how the taxation system could be changed to promote more fairness in the society?
Okay, so this is I can talk for hours of this, but in one minute I'll give you just a few sound bites. Okay, so if we look at what happened in the last 20 years to the progressivity degree of labor taxation, we can see that it has gone down, and partly we are also responsible, perhaps the World Bank and a simplification of tax regimes has gone hand in hand with the flattening of sometimes of the tax schedule. So this is the first problem. We see that progressivity has gone down. The second problem is that the tax base has been fairly narrow and it's fairly focused on the labor income. So high income or middle income countries have a very, very small rate of inheritance tax or wealth taxation. Developing countries are basically inexistent. So if you want to finance protection for all, a stable social contract, you need a broad tax base and a progressive tax base. And to get there, you have to tax other forms of income, and capital is certainly one way to go. But there are other suggestions, like other tax bases, like emission, climate change related taxation, that should be explored. Taxing rents, there are many forms of rents that could be taxed. So we have. We have a long way to go, and there's a lot of possibility of having a larger and fairer tax system.
So more progressivity, wider tax bases, environmental taxes, taxing various rents. Bernadette, would you agree to that list?
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think it's absolutely clear that there cannot be any social cohesion and public effectiveness without solid tax bases. That is absolutely clear. And what is very important is confidence. People are normally ready to pay their taxes if they believe that the other people are also paying their taxes in a fair way. And that is one of the problem, because as you know, big companies are not paying their fair share of taxes. And this is undermining the agreement for people to pay their taxes. If people have the feeling that the others are not paying according to their income or according to what they should be paying, then it diminishes the confidence that people have and their willingness to pay taxes. And I think the question of tax evasion, tax fairness, taxing the big companies is a very important issue as well.
I think on this point, all of us would agree that fairness and taxing those who don't pay sufficient taxes is a very important issue. But just a little bit of hope, if I can mention that I think there is some progress with such taxes. We can see, for example, the various European Commission fines for big companies, including US tech giants, who sometimes have to pay really large sums of money. We can see a much wider sharing of tax information across countries, which again, a tool to detect the rich people hiding their income and wealth elsewhere and avoiding taxes. So a lot to do, but at least some positive progress has been made.
Yeah, I think we have to encourage those moving in this direction.
And this brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you very much for listening to Bruegel Backstage on the Sound of Economics channel. And thank you to my guests, Maurizio Bussolo and Bernadette Segal. If you are interested in more of Bruegel's work, we have an array of blog posts and publications available at our website, www.bruegel.org. I hope you will join us again. Until next time, bye-bye.